Well, good morning, everybody. The message today is going to be continuing in the book of John. Oh, there's something that's still clicking here. Let me mute all the other mics. And just the one I'm using. There we go. Yes, the book of John. I'm trying to really examine everything that happens in the book of John on the whole context. What is the whole message that the book is really trying to deliver? And see how each event that's outlined fits into the main message that John is trying to deliver. He starts off, let me remind you again, in the John chapter 1. This man, Jesus, is the light of the world. He is God. He was with God. Without him, nothing that was made has been made. Everything that has been made with him. There's nothing that hasn't been made without his participation. He is the light of the world. Everything else in the book of John revolves right back to that message. He's the light of the world, and he came into the world, and the world did not receive him for who he was. Over and over, each event that happens, that's what John looks at. What did this event say about who Jesus was? And did people hear that? Did people recognize who he was? Right before John chapter 11, which is what we are going to be looking at today, the thing that happened right before this, Jesus had just finished talking about the good sheep. He's the shepherd, and people go, what on earth is he talking about? You must be possessed by a demon. Nothing here makes any sense. And Jesus says, whatever I'm doing is from God. And people asked him, if you are saying you're the Messiah, say it clearly. And he said, well, I've told you. Wasn't clear enough for them. And they deduced that what he was saying by calling God his father, he was saying he was God's son. That must be blasphemy. Even though he was clearly telling them who he was, all they could see is this man is blaspheming. And it ends up, they took up stones to stone him. They actively tried to kill him. And he got away. And he went out of the area to where John had been baptizing. And many people came and believed. That's kind of where we pick up in John chapter 11. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Little parenthetical statement, John says. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus was now sick, is the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. By the way, that story has not been in the book of John. We've gone all the way through John. That story's not in there. But John is saying, this is like it's something we should know about. Because it is something we should know about. Because it's in the other Gospels. Now, I want to stop right there. What does this say about Mary, Martha, Lazarus, and Jesus? Mary was that person in that story earlier on, and I didn't even look at what other gospel it's in. And that story happened was that Jesus was at a place at a Pharisee's house, I think, or something, having a discussion, and this woman comes in and brings an alabaster vial of oil, perfume. This is expensive stuff. And then she anoints his feet because nobody thought to wash his feet, which I guess was a part of a normal thing that hosts would do for honored guests. That hadn't been done with Jesus, and Mary did this. So that tells me Mary saw Jesus as someone very, very important to her. And then she didn't have a towel, so she used her hair to wipe his feet dry. That is an act of such humility, an act of submission to someone who's so vastly important. Mary saw Jesus as someone who is extremely important to her. At verse 3, the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." That incident now developed a relationship between Jesus and Mary and the whole family. Mary described her brother Lazarus to Jesus as the one you love. Jesus had not only accepted Mary's humble adoration of him, but developed a friendship with her and her whole family. Now, in the book of John so far, some people have heard, had seen what Jesus has done and say, wow, this is, there's something going on here, there's something special. People had listened to his message, and in the book of John, the message is, hey, I'm the light of the world. And another part of this message is judgment. You go by the law. Have you actually read the law? This is what the law is saying. You think you are obeying it enough? You're not. That's the message Jesus has been giving. Now, as I said before, that message, you've broken the law, and that's, you are not living up to what God has required. That message appealed to some people, but not to others. It appealed to Mary and Martha and Lazarus. The only people that that would appeal to are people who already knew and were willing to admit publicly that they had fallen far short of what the law of God had said, and they were in need of help. That is who were attracted to Jesus. Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were among those. The people it did not appeal to were the people who thought they were doing pretty well as far as obeying the law, the people who thought they knew the Bible pretty well, the people who knew the Bible well enough to look at what Jesus was saying, was doing, and say, hey, he's breaking the law. In the book of John already, he's had two healings on the Sabbath, and that automatically. This just proves he is not a real prophet, because real prophets wouldn't break the law. So whatever he's saying, he is not someone special. He's a false prophet. But Mary, Martha, and Lazarus had a very different relationship with Jesus. These people who knew Mary especially, and I'm assuming Martha and Lazarus, but Mary especially knew she falls far short of what God required. And she was desperate for help from Jesus. So now Lazarus is sick. The word has got to Jesus. Verse 4, when he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death." For it is, it is for God's glory, so God's Son may be glorified through it. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, so when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he rushed right away. Wow. So when he heard, he loved Martha, her sister, Lazarus. So, as a result of his love for them, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then, well, let me stop there. Have you ever asked God for help because you were sick, because you were hurting, because there was some pressing need in your life, and it didn't happen, at least right away? And you did any of you ever start to wonder, wow, does that mean God says he loves me? Where is he? Did that ever occur to you? Jesus, because he loved Mary, Martha, and Lazarus, he stayed 2 more days while Lazarus was sick. He did that because he loved them. I've got to be honest, I don't understand that. Except Jesus' explanation was so that God's Son may be glorified through it. This is for God's glory. Sometimes our suffering, our pain, even our death, maybe for God's glory. Verse 7, then he said to his disciples, "Let's go back to Judea." Remember, chapter 10, Judea, what just happened there? The Pharisees not only had decided they were going to kill him, they actually picked up stones to start the act. They had attempted to kill Jesus. So Jesus saying, well, let's go back to Judea. Verse 8, but Rabbi, just a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you. And why are you going back? Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they have seen this world's light. But when a person walks at night, they stumble, for they have no light. Now, if I were there and heard Jesus say that, I would have asked, what on earth does that have to do with us going back to Judea? I don't understand what on earth you're saying. And I think a lot of people listening to Jesus had that same reaction. Because many times he would say things that didn't seem to really connect with the topic at hand. Now, looking back on it, we can see how connected it is. But at the time, it just seemed like this is crazy talk. But remember, the whole book of John, the message is Jesus is the light of the world. Now, why do we need light? Jesus explains, because anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble. If you don't have the light, if you walk at night, you will stumble. If Jesus is the light of the world, he wants to go to Judea so that they won't stumble. So they will see reality. Now, what his disciples were concerned about, but going back there, you're going to get killed. They're going to stone you. And I think Jesus was answering their question. Why are you going back when you know you're going to get killed? Because I'm the light of the world. This is how people ultimately will know who Jesus is, by him getting killed and raising from the dead. After he'd said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." And his disciples said, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better." In other words, why do we need to go to Judea? And Jesus, by the way, it wasn't in the book of John, it was in the other Gospels. Jesus had already healed people from a distance. Remember the Roman centurion who had a child who was sick and came to Jesus, asked for help, and he said, "I don't want to bother you. I know you don't have to physically actually come. You can just say the word and they'll be healed." And Jesus said, "Yes, you're right. Go home. Your child is healed." Jesus did not have to go there. So that's, if I was one of his disciples, I'd have said, "Well, why don't we do one of those things, Jesus? Why don't you just wake up Lazarus from where we are right now?" So then he said to them plainly, "Lazarus is dead." I want to back up. Verse 4, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death." And now he is saying, "Lazarus is dead." Now, don't those two things seem to contradict each other? This will not end in death. And now Jesus is saying, "Lazarus is dead." You know, sometimes the message we get from God seems to contradict itself. And it is hard to understand what it is God is saying. If I were standing in Jesus' presence right then, I would have said, "I have no idea what's happening here." You just said his sickness would not end in death. And now you're saying he's dead. And he says, "For your sake, I'm glad I was not there." Jesus was glad that he was not there to prevent Lazarus from dying. Man, that's hard to understand. That's hard to understand if you were Mary, if you were Martha. It would be hard for me to understand if I was one of his disciples. "I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him." Then Thomas, I'm assuming he, like I would have been right then, is probably completely confused. What on earth? What is going on? I don't understand it. So Thomas, then known as Didymus, said to the rest of the disciples, Let's go too, so we may die with him. That tells me something about Thomas that I think is pretty admirable. Thomas did not have Jesus figured out, couldn't understand what he was saying, could not understand why Jesus wanted to go to Lazarus now that we know he's dead. Why didn't you go early? We don't know any. And people there have already tried to kill you. Why are we going? He didn't know. He did know we go there. If Jesus goes there, he's going to die. They've tried to kill him already. And Thomas's conclusion is, well, if Jesus is going to die, let's go with him so we can die too. That tells me that Thomas knew that all of his eggs were in that basket. The only option he had was to follow Jesus. And if that meant that he was going to die, he was willing to do it. He was willing to do it. By the way, that's the same Thomas that we later call Doubting Thomas. Does that sound like doubt to you? But I'm not going to get distracted by that. Verse 17, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem. I think we're about 2 miles from here to downtown Syracuse. That's how far Bethany was from Jerusalem. Jerusalem, that's the hub, that's the center of all the power of the Jews as well as Roman power. That's where the Pharisees, that's where the temple was, that's where the scribes were, the priests, all the religious authorities as well as the Roman authorities, that's where it was all was. And the Jewish leaders had already decided they were going to kill Jesus. They already tried to kill Jesus. That's how far Bethany was from here to downtown Syracuse. And many Jews had come to Mary and Martha to comfort them in the loss of their brothers. They knew that this was a big loss. And remember the word Jews in John, when John uses that word, he's not using it the same way we use it now. He's talking about specific kinds of Jews, the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees. That's who John has used this word to refer to. So they had some connection with this family as well. They knew they were hurting. And they were being good Jews. They were following the Bible by offering comfort to this family. And Martha had heard that Jesus was coming and went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, you know, before I go there, Mary was the one who had come to Jesus and put the perfume, wiped her hair, but now she's not the one that runs out to meet Jesus. It's Martha. It doesn't say why. The scripture does not say why Martha went instead of Mary. I'm wondering if Martha was just so crushed by the fact that Jesus didn't come when they needed him. And now her brother's dead. It was just too much for her to be eager to come out to greet Jesus. Because the anger, the pain may still be too much. I don't know, that's my guess. If you had been here, my brother would not have died, is what Martha said, which is, I'm thinking, what Mary probably didn't have the courage to say yet. I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha answered, because, you know, Jesus is always saying these crazy things. Light of the world and something about people stumbling. Your brother will rise again. So I'm thinking Martha's trying to interpret what he's saying by some things in the Bible. Now, Martha says, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection in the last day. By the way, that belief that there was a last day and there was going to be a resurrection, where do you find that in the Old Testament? It's not really there explicitly. But it is something that the Pharisees had looked in the Old Testament and had examined the scriptures, and the Pharisees had come to the conclusion that even after a person dies, they will be raised again. They saw that in the scripture. There were other branches of Jewish thought, Jewish theology, that didn't really think that was true. That thought basically when you died, that was kind of the end. And if you look in the Old Testament, it's hard to argue with that. But the Pharisees had come to the conclusion there was a resurrection. So Martha here is basically saying she is following the teachings of the Pharisees, which is why I think that's why the Jews, meaning the Pharisees, had a connection with them. Because Mary, Martha, Lazarus, this is a family that was connected with them. They believed the teachings that the Pharisees had been giving. And by the way, they were right. The Pharisees had a lot of things right, and this was one of them. Later on in the book of Acts, Paul, when he was brought to trial, he noticed the people in the jury that were trying him. Some of them were Pharisees, and some were Sadducees. And Paul used a tactic that we know about. He says, I'm on trial because I'm a Pharisee. I believe in the resurrection of the dead. I believe God rose Jesus from the dead. He knew that was a hot button topic, that there was big differences of opinions between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and Paul's tactic worked. They ended up arguing among themselves about who was right, about whether or not there was a resurrection. So this is telling me Martha, along with Mary and Lazarus, were in the Pharisees' camp theologically here. And they were right. The Pharisees were not evil, wrong people. They were people who genuinely studied the Bible and had a lot of things right. They had so many things right, they didn't think they had anything wrong. I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Martha was thinking, Jesus, this is probably what you're referring to, right? I know he's going to raise. I know that this is all temporary, and one day we're all going to raise in the last day. I know that's supposed to comfort me. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live. Even though they die, whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Lazarus had just died. Jesus said, whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this, Martha? Man, that's a hard thing to believe. Do you believe your brother's not going to die even though he's in there dead? Even though he's in the tomb now 4 days, do you believe he's not going to die? Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she said. I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. And after she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and he's asking for you. He's asking for her. I know Jesus knew how hurt Mary was. And if I'm right, the reason why she didn't want to see him is because of she's hurting so bad, she's probably angry at Jesus. But Jesus wants to see her. You know, Jesus wants to see us even when we're mad at him. And even when we have bones to pick with him. I've been in that place in my life. I had bones to pick with God. I did not know why my life was going the way it was when I deserved far better than what I was getting. I had a bone to pick with God. And, you know, part of what I was in my, for me, at that point in my life, you know what, God, I'm not going to leave the church. I'm not going to disbelieve in you so that I can prove to you that you're the one who needs to change, not me. I'm not getting what I deserve. God, this is unfair. What Job went through, that was Job was hurting. He was mad at God. Why am I hurting so bad? I don't deserve this. Why? Where is the justice? God, what is going on? I've been there. I imagine that's probably where Mary was right then as well. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews, who had been there with Mary in the house, comforting her, now noticed she got up quickly. See, she hadn't gone, but now that Jesus said he wanted to see her, okay, I'm coming. I don't know. It doesn't say why all of a sudden now she gets up quickly to go. One thing that makes sense to me, I don't know if this is true, maybe Mary is saying, Jesus, you want to hear what I have to say? Okay, I'm coming. I'm coming now. You want to talk to me, huh? Okay, here we go. And what's behind that is pain, disappointment. Disappointment in Jesus. The Jews who are there don't know why Mary all of a sudden now quickly gets up and goes to Jesus, but they thought, well, maybe she's going there to mourn. Mourning maybe not have been what was on her mind. Mary reached the place where Jesus and saw him, and she fell down at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother wouldn't have died. when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came along with her were also weeping. I don't know if they were weeping because they were hurt as much as Mary was by Lazarus' death, or it was just part of what we do now in funerals. It was just part of the ritual of recognizing, mourning someone's death. You would weep. And Jesus was moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. You know, in a sense, I'm still with Mary here. If Mary and Martha's pain was so great and Jesus really loved them, why didn't he help them in their time of need? The greater purpose, that God be glorified, was even more important to Jesus, but that doesn't mean he didn't care about their pain. He cared. This is what he is going to do to give glory to God, and he knows it's going to hurt them deeply. And he feels that pain. When I pray to God, beg him, demand from him things that I think he should be giving me because he said he'd be giving it to me, and it doesn't come the way or the time I expect or want or need, I may be angry with him. I'm hurting. God knows my pain. Even then, what I tend to think then is, if you really cared about me, you'd be doing this. Since you don't do it, that means you don't care about me. A lot of people are right there. Since God isn't doing for them what they need, what they want, what they're asking for, the conclusion they come to is, God doesn't really care. But Jesus wept. He does care. He cares about our pain. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind have kept this man from dying?" Well, yeah, that is a question Mary was asking. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there's a bad odor. He's been in there 4 days." And then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believed, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone, and Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you heard me. I knew you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may also believe that you sent me." This is the message that Jesus was so passionate to deliver. That you may believe that God sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out." And the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with the strips of linen, a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary had seen what Jesus did and believed in him. That's why Jesus did this. So the glory of God would be revealed. So people who were so convinced they were right, they had their theology all down pat. When they see what God is actually doing through Jesus, they also choose to believe in Jesus. That's what was more important to Jesus than the temporary pain and disappointment that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were going through. He's looking to the needs of people beyond them. The needs of the Pharisees who had just been trying to kill him. That's where his heart was. But some of them believed, but some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting in the Sanhedrin. By the way, that's like the supreme court of the the Jewish religious establishment. "What are we accomplishing?" they asked. "Here is this man performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone's going to believe in him." What's the problem with that? Well, they had already decided that he's a false prophet. That's the problem. If everyone believes in him, then the Romans will come in and take away our temple and our nation. If they believe that Jesus really is the Messiah, they know the Romans are going to know they're going to have a rebellion on their hand. Everyone in the Jewish nation at that point knew God had promised a Messiah, and they knew the Messiah was going to deliver them from bondage. And there were many people who said, "Oh, I think I'm the Messiah," and had started to try to rally the troops to that. And the Romans had to squish one after another of each one of these rebellions. And the Jewish establishment said, "Oh, no. If Jesus gets too many people on his side, then the Romans are going to have no choice but to come in and wipe us off the face of the earth." Then one of them, named Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year — this is the main guy. You can't get any higher in the Jewish hierarchy than Caiaphas. He spoke up. "You know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish." In other words, they were having a debate. Some people said, "Well, you know, if we go through and get Jesus killed, there's so many people believe him. Isn't this going to cause more problems? I mean, do we have to go that far?" And some people say, "Yes, we have to go that far." And Caiaphas, the main guy, said, "Well, it's going to be tough, but here's the thing. It's better that he die than the whole nation die." And verse 51, "He did not say this on his own, but as high priest, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation. And not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of Israel, to bring them together to make them one. So from that day on, they plotted to take his life." So the Pharisees had come to the conclusion that Jesus had to die. Jesus gave them all the ammunition they needed. "I'm the Son of God. I've been sent from the Father, and I'm healing even on the Sabbath. He knew they had no choice. They had no choice but to try to kill him. And you know something? That's exactly what Jesus wanted to happen. They didn't realize it, but they were being tools of God's plan. By their hands, Jesus would die. By their hands, the hands of the people who had committed themselves to obey God fully to the greatest extent, by their hands, the light of the world would be killed. The Son of God would be executed. By their hands, Jesus would lay down his life so that he could take it up again. You know, I guess I have a soft spot in my heart for the Pharisees, if you hadn't noticed, because they were doing their best to obey God the best they knew how to. Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul, was like that. He was a Pharisee of the Pharisees, and he had gone out of his way to make sure that false prophecies were being extinguished, that the law of God was being upheld. He'd gone so far as to endorse the killing of Stephen. He'd gone so far as to go to Damascus on his way to get more of these Christians who had been following this false prophet. He believed he was doing everything right. And I think I'm kind of like Saul there. I've worked so hard to do everything right in my life. The truth is, I've failed miserably. Saul came to that conclusion. And many of these Jews that are doing this right now to Jesus, they also came to that conclusion about 50 days after the Passover, when Peter, James, and John, and the rest of the 12 apostles delivered a message to them. This man who you crucified, God has shown that he is the Son of God because he raised him from the dead. Now what do you think of yourselves? Now what do you want to do? You tried to do everything right, and in the end, you ended up killing the Son of God. Now do you believe you need help? And 3,000 of them said, yes, I do need help. Yes, I do need to be saved. That's what Caiaphas had just prophesied would happen. Because of Jesus' death and his resurrection, now they have the opportunity anyway to see that their hope can only be in Jesus. Their hope can't be in believing that they have obeyed the law of God well enough to earn, I guess, salvation. Instead, their efforts at earning their own salvation had made them into killers of the Son of God. It is better for one man to die for the people then the whole nation perish. It is better that Jesus, who did not deserve what he got, it is better for Jesus to die. So that I can live. That does not sound fair in the least. It is better for Jesus to die so that we can live. Let's go to the Lord in prayer.